Hi, I'm Maya Garantz.
And I'm Rebecca Cohen.
And this is The Sauce, the culture and politics podcast where we drink cocktails and ruin the stuff you love.
In this episode, we're going to ruin Christmas decorations. Who gives a fuck about Christmas and decorations? No, just kidding. We did that in a different episode. In this episode, everything is ruined.
Everything
basically is
ruined. It's really ruined. I think we're just going to get to the series finale of the Trump presidency and why it's causing all of us to need to be drunk all the time.
Exactly. Okay, so speaking of being drunk all the time, this episode really is about why we drink. Like, this is where we're going to get into it. So what are we drinking? Maya, what are you drinking this week?
I am drinking just straight tequila and lime. I have my Topo Chico back. I also have tea back. I have like twice as many like chasers as I do alcohol because the alcohol's straight and I'm already a little buzzy.
Yeah. You texted me earlier that you had been drinking tequila for some time before we started recording.
So maybe today I've been drinking tequila in the sun since around noon. Maybe that's the case. I don't know. I am just trying to not completely fucking lose it. Is that?
I think we all are. That's fair. That seems to be the standard at this time. It's par for the course.
Yes. And how are you drinking and what are you doing? What's going on?
I have to give a little bit of background to explain it because there's probably younger folks listening. But my new cocktail obsession, my new liquor obsession is Galliano. I don't know if you're familiar. Nobody is. Mm-mm. So Galliano is an Italian liqueur that was wildly popular in the late 70s and sort of into the early 80s. It's a sweet yellow liqueur that comes in a super tall bottle that like you may have seen behind a bar, but no one's ever ordered. And it was used in this cocktail called the Harvey Wallbanger.
Oh, yes. I've heard of Harvey Wallbanger. Yes.
So the Harvey Wallbanger was basically a screwdriver. It was vodka and orange juice with Galliano top, like a little half an ounce of Galliano on the top.
Okay.
It's kind of a girly drink at the time. Very popular. And then just like abruptly went out of fashion and no one ever ordered it again for decades. But I was aware of it. I learned about it in bartending school. And like we had a bottle of Galliano in my bar in the 90s and it just sat there and like no one ever ordered anything with it. And I always wondered about it. I never tasted it. And then for whatever reason, recently Matt and I were at a restaurant and we were like, do you have Galliano? And they let us taste it. I'm like, this is really good. It turns out that in the 70s, they had changed the recipe and made it sweeter and more treacly. But then at some point since then, they went back to the traditional recipe. So now it's kind of better than it was, I guess. But we liked it and we bought a bottle of it. And now I'm obsessed with coming up with cocktails.
Wow.
So this one I call the Hardly Wallbanger. Thank you for laughing at that. I really appreciate it. So it's my sort of like contemporary martini drink sort of version of the Harvey Wallbanger. It's vodka and Galliano. I didn't have orange juice and I wouldn't want to put orange juice in it anyway. So I put lemon juice, a little bit of triple sec and orange bitters and garnish with a cherry. And I have to say it's delightful. I really love it.
That sounds awesome. And I wish I could see you and have you make me one of those, but we're just never going to be able to see anyone ever again.
Exactly. So, oh well. But I will put the recipe in the Discord. We have a Discord section for cocktail recipes, and I'm going to definitely put that one.
Awesome.
Maybe a couple others I've come across.
And our Discord channel, by the way, is for our patrons only. And we've been having really interesting conversations about what to do with Trumpy relatives. Among other things. I mean, we've been talking about lots of things.
Difficult situation.
Really difficult situations, but also this thing that a lot of us are in, which I think we're going to get to soon, which is like all of a sudden certain Trumpy relatives, it's like they get mad for you just not being civil enough to just let them believe the stupid shit they believe. Mm-hmm. Like the thing they're really mad about is not that like you're right or that the person they've been following is a monster. They're mad about the fact that you'd be so rude as to point that out to them.
Yep. That's a really well noticed trend. Anyway, so overall, I'm doing shitty. That's part of the reason why we've done like 2 episodes in the last 2.5 months or something. Apologies to our listeners. I've been having a hard time. I have kind of been in a bad place mental health-wise, also executive functioning-wise, because those go together. I have ADHD, as many have heard me talk about. And so when I'm feeling anxious, it makes it harder for me to function, to get things done, to be a productive person. And then I get more anxious because I didn't do the things I was supposed to do, and it has a cyclical effect, and it's bad. And so I'm dealing with that. Don't worry. I have a great psychiatric nurse practitioner, and I'm in an amazing group for adults with ADHD where we learn skills and tools to help us do better. So I'm dealing, but it's been rough, which I think pertains to what we're going to talk about in this episode anyway.
In fact, I think that's exactly what we're going to be talking about, because I think everyone has been really, really struggling in whatever. I mean, that's one of the things that's interesting, is that we all have our stuff that we deal with day to day. But when circumstances are a certain way, then our normal tools for managing our stuff, our normal tools get compromised. I think we are in a profoundly compromised moment. And I think this episode is about how the fuck are we going to get through the next fucking 30 days and not fucking lose our minds? Like, Jesus, right. God.
Do you know how?
No, but we can talk about why we are losing our minds. I mean, maybe that'll help in like a talk therapy kind of way. Like, I don't fucking know.
Let's get into it.
You know, you actually had a great tweet this weekend where you were like, we're finally coming to the season finale. I was bored with this show, but the season finale, and I feel kind of like the season finale is so on the nose.
Even not just season finale, I'm hoping series finale.
Series finale. Right? Totally. But I feel like even Aaron Sorkin would find this shit a little hack.
Right? Yeah, I've seen a number of people tweeting similar sentiments, like, if a writer of a TV show wrote this, they would be fired. This is hack.
Yeah.
But here we are. The Trump show. What?
Did you see the thing where Aaron Sorkin actually had opinions about how this should all go down?
I don't care. Don't tell me what Aaron Sorkin had to say.
Because it's just going to make you so angry. So I have to tell you, because it's just going to make you so angry. Because it's just like neoliberal democratic bullshit that got us into this mess in the first place.
Did you seriously just say neoliberal?
Okay, let me just say it. Okay, so Aaron Sorkin did this thing where he was like, what should happen in the season finale is Trump should lose. And then as he's about to try to like not do a peaceful transfer of power, all the Republican senators should go to the Oval Office and like tell him, hey man, it's over. Redeeming the rest of the Republican Party as the ones who end up learning to take responsibility, because that's what the American people want.
Because that's Aaron Sorkin's version. Show.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There we go.
But that's why we like his shows, because they're that kind of fantasy. You know? Okay. Let's talk about this, because so much has happened really since we've done an episode, much less a topical episode where we address current events.
I think part of it is that we've been avoiding current events because it's too, like,
it's too much.
It's just like, I can't, like,
I can't. Yeah. I mean, the New York Times published Trump's tax returns information. We learned that he paid $750 in taxes. And then prior to that, didn't pay taxes for like 10 years, but we already knew that.
I mean, what's amazing about the Trump tax returns thing is that like, that's his best version of his finances that he told the government. So you know that what it really is. And there are two additionally notable things. One, that he would lie about paying Ivanka as a consultant, even though she's an employee, so that he can write off
that's
like...
for sure fraud. He hired Ivanka's company as a consultant on projects that she, as an employee of the Trump Organization, was supervising.
Yes.
That's fucking illegal. That's just like straight up fraud.
So there's fraud in his best case scenario picture of his finances for the government. But then also he owes like $450 million.
Yeah, $450 million, which isn't actually that much money, but for Trump, that's a lot of money.
Well, yeah.
But he owes it to we don't know whom. So that's interesting. That's fun. That's, to have that.
That's fun.
Going
that makes
on.
Me feel like it explains to me why he so wants to stay in office, because if he doesn't, there are people who are going to give him like nerve damage agent, or he's going to have concrete shoes and be dropped in the East River. Like, he owes $450 million to someone, and they're going to come to collect the second he's out of the White House, man.
Let's be real. It's not all Deutsche Bank.
No.
And also, Deutsche Bank is literally the only bank that will lend to him.
Also, there was an amazing article that you guys should all check out about Deutsche Bank. And how it's a giant fucking laundry machine for horrible, like BuzzFeed did a beautiful article about the way that all kinds of illegal, repugnant money is being moved through Deutsche Bank. So Trump owes many millions of dollars to probably not very nice people.
Yeah, well, one of the many groups that I hope will come after him if and when he leaves his protected position. So in other news, since we last chatted, I have to bring this up, the Melania tapes. It's not a huge thing, but it was just delightful to me that her friend, first of all, that her friend taped her. I think my favorite thing about the Melania tapes is the friend, like, giving her a sympathetic ear and being like, yeah, it's not your fault. They're just awful to you as she's recording this.
As she's recording it,
completely planning to release
it. Yeah, absolutely.
Love it. But also just... Melania, like, who gives a fuck about Christmas and decorations? I'm like, I'm with you, sister.
Totally. But also, given how misogynist our culture is, this should be Hillary's cookies times a million. Because she's also talking about kids in cages, and she's like...
Oh, yeah. But she just spouts the Trump line on that.
Yeah.
If you were harboring any idea that Melania is just kind of trapped in the situation or whatever, you know, she just wanted to be a gold digger and she doesn't care about politics. No, she seems to buy into the whole line, so fuck her.
She's complicit. And people have been so wanting to feel like, Melania, blink twice if you need us to help you. Like, bitch is fine, man.
She's complicit. So we also had the first presidential debate, which now feels like fucking ancient history.
A million years ago. It wasn't even a week.
I know. It feels like it doesn't even matter at this point, and it kind of doesn't.
No.
But maybe we'll get into it later. One of the interesting things about it, I think, is just that Trump essentially gave, I think, the same performance he gave in his debates against Hillary, but it read very differently.
When the person he's reading is a man.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
It's fascinating.
That people were much more affronted by his imperious attitude and interrupting constantly when he was interrupting another white dude.
Yeah. And that, like, the only thing that Joe had to do was to appear just reasonable and calm. And it makes me think of the performance of Hillary and how she was the reasonable alternative, but somehow
I don't know what the difference would be.
She wasn't old enough, maybe,
and she didn't directly tell Trump to shut up, which I'm sure would have just
gone over amazing. That is absolutely
why didn't she do that. Anyway, I thought it was very amusing that we were texting about it and you were saying you weren't going to watch, but you said, let me know if, you know, Trump has a stroke or something, because you said, I want to be there to witness any catastrophic medical event.
Yes. That's which I think is... I said, like, if he has a heart attack during the debate, I definitely want to be watching.
Right. But little did we know there was a catastrophic medical event occurring at that very moment.
In his body.
We just couldn't perceive it. We couldn't perceive it yet. But before we get into that...
I think that... So this... What? I want to talk because... So I'm sitting here. I want you guys to know the past week has been hard with this, but for a few weeks I'd been trying to like limit my social media exposure. Nothing that is going to be in the news is going to change how I'm going to vote. And none of it's going to change the stuff that I've been doing. I've been like phone banking and doing all this stuff and trying to raise money for Senate candidates. And I've turned my Instagram entirely over to political things for like the next month. And like, just to make our listeners feel good, I went and did an hour at my neighborhood Senate fundraiser walkathon, which raised over $100,000 for 8 Senate races where small dollar donations are going to go farther.
How many laps did you walk, bitch?
I just worked the Georgia table where we were raising money for Warnock in the special election. There was a teen team that did Montana. They've raised like $10,000 for Montana.
That makes it me was feel great. Very
so
good.
I'm doing. I have my little civic tithe accountability election task group. We're doing our stuff. I'm like, just focus on the election. Just focus on the election. It's Rosh Hashanah. We're doing a Zoom with the fam. We're starting to feel a turn of hope, and then.
So okay, Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. And wow, you know, I was already having a difficult time.
Yeah.
Mentally, emotionally, psychologically. You know, every day Matt comes to me with, there's 3 new polls out. Biden's ahead by this many points in this state and that many. And I'm like, fuck off. Just fuck off, because polls didn't shed any light for me last time around. You know, there's the trauma there. But I've been trying to maintain that hope. And then... You know, it was like, if we could just get through November,
we're so fucking close.
And then, oh, so brutal. And like, this was the thing, I just wanted to be sad to lose Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I just wanted to mourn this awesome figure, this icon, this trailblazer, but then that is going to naturally take a back seat to the political consideration and the reality of her seat being now open and Trump still being president.
And her seat being now open with a bunch of senators who are looking down the barrel of possibly losing the Senate.
Yeah.
And people who are cynical, fucked up, evil monsters who just don't care. I'm looking at you, Mitch McConnell. I'm looking at you, Mitch McConnell. Like, these people are...
He is a demon.
And I know that for all of our listeners, there's this way that every time Justice Ginsburg had some health moment, we would all be like, oh, fuck!
Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. Yeah.
And then we'd be like, she's working from home, she's fine. And we'd be like, oh, God, okay, we could live to see one more day. And then the finality of her dying, like, I think it's as grim as it was for me since the actual election. Like, it took me back to election night. It took me back to election night.
Yeah, I feel that. It definitely took me back to a very rough place, too. And that's where we were up until a few days ago.
No, I mean, it's still pretty bad.
It's still difficult. But, like, they were fast-tracking his nominee. He picked who everybody fucking knew he would pick. The woman, but, like, the most... awful woman you could come up with.
We're literally the weird Catholic sort of sect that she belongs to. Women call themselves handmaidens.
They do Pentecostal shit too. It's Catholic, but they do Pentecostal type stuff, like healing and I don't know, snake handling, I'm gonna assume. I don't know.
And they actually call women are supposed to be handmaids to the men in their like the people of praise. I mean, it's like Jesus Christ.
No, they're super into him.
One of our listeners was like, she's in Canada, and she was like, I remember on an earlier episode you guys were like, when are we gonna know that it's time to flee the country? She's like, guys,
this could be it. No, but honestly, that is how I felt until a few days ago. when out of nowhere, a tiny sprig of hope, the tiny little bud of hope.
A sprig of justice. A sprig of justice. And I just want to briefly mention, just briefly list all the things we haven't, can't even get to in terms of the horrors that are making us grind our teeth. And I just very briefly.
Yeah. Go.
We have forced hysterectomies of people in ICE facilities, okay? We have
forced hysterectomies.
We have the entire West Coast on fire. Like, when's climate change gonna happen? Bitch, it's here. We have, like, Republicans defending this white supremacist 18-year-old who went to a BLM rally in another state and killed people. Oh, yeah, by the way, how's Jacob Blake doing? Is he walking yet? Breonna Taylor, grand jury. Eric Trump is under major investigation. Oh, and it seems like forever ago, but just a month and a half ago, we were learning about Russia putting bounties on American soldiers. So it's a lot, guys.
Yeah. And all of that, all the stuff you just mentioned is like not even front page news.
No.
It's like
no.
not above the fold because there's so much other shit going on. It is a little bit to handle. So let's talk about the big news right now next.
Yes. So there's this little sprig of hope, this little sprig of justice, this little sprig of something, a little something that feels like something.
Sprouting up.
And what it is that the Amy Coney Barrett party, coming out party, nomination party, turned out to be a COVID super spreader event.
Super spreader event. Yes. And can I say, what it really is some fucking real-ass Jewish mysticism in action. You know what happens when you defy Ruth Bader Ginsburg's dying wish?
Yeah.
This is what happens.
Yeah.
This is what happens. This is some Yiddish curse going on.
Wow. I mean, all of our faves. Kellyanne Conway is sick. Chris Christie is sick. A bunch of Republican senators are sick or quarantining.
It's been so enjoyable
really?
To check the news and like every day it's someone new that you just hate and are thrilled. Like it was so disappointing when Bill Barr tested negative.
Except but then he's quarantining.
He's self-quarantining. So it's like we all saw the video of him with Kellyanne Conway.
Hugging, snuggling up.
Canoodling at that event. So, you know, fingers crossed. Sometimes the tests are wrong.
And the fact that, like, Amy Coney Barrett is the shedder, like the president of Notre Dame, where she was a law professor, like he got it too.
Oh, really?
And Notre Dame, they had a phone number for students to rat each other out if they weren't following, like, COVID restrictions.
Oh.
And instead, the students are using it to go after the administration.
Amazing. Kids. Oh, the kids are all right.
The kids are all right.
There's so much stuff to talk about in regard to this whole story, but a few things. Number one, I can't believe that the news could still shock me. That, like, at this point, after 4 years of this bullshit, I'm amazed. Which is why I just tweeted the thing about, like, I've never been into the Trump show, but this series finale really kind of got me. Trump is a notorious germaphobe.
Yes.
He's, like, OCD about it. He's
And he complains about having to meet these people, these little people, and shake their hands.
He's super careful about shit because he's very terrified of illness. So it's wild to me that despite his public claims that he doesn't give a shit and that COVID's no big deal, you would think, especially given that on the Bob Woodward tapes, he clearly expressed an understanding of the seriousness of this infection.
Oh my God. I forgot all about that. That just happened.
That's another
Trump,
thing.
Trump knew that it was airborne so early, so early. It could have been stopped. Oh my God.
Yeah, but that's like.
Ah, my jaws.
It's a million years ago. That's not even news anymore. So he knew, and he's a germaphobe, and yet. He really, like, believed his own bullshit And it makes me think of that episode we did where we talked about this and the idea that COVID is the ultimate troll.
Yeah.
It's the one thing that Trump can't troll.
Yeah.
He can't bullshit it. He bullshits his way out of everything. He can't bullshit the coronavirus.
No.
And it's like that never really got through to him.
No.
It never got through to him.
And there's a way that I think in terms of his own bullshit, I mean, we know he's a sociopath who lacks empathy for anyone at all. Like it's a really sociopathic level of lack of empathy. But I think that the hubris, I think that's what the thing is about the kind of super spreader event, which is probably where he got it. The profound hubris of all of these white people, and they're white.
They are.
Thinking that like, what, this is a disease for poor black people? This is like, it doesn't apply to them. People don't get it if they're rich and white.
But you consider that Herman Cain got it and died.
That was one of my favorite tweets. Somebody was like, guys, screenwriters, you know that the black friend dies first. You should have seen this coming, you know?
That's genius. That's genius. But like, they saw that and that didn't register.
No.
Nobody went, oh, shit, this is a real thing. Well, I wonder why. I wonder why Herman Cain's death didn't register with them as like something that could affect them as well. So, yeah.
No one wore masks at this Barrett event. There was no social distancing. Nobody. There was a lot of indoors buffet dining. Like,
And of course, in the debate prep, like Chris Christie was there helping him prep for the debate, as was Giuliani. Waiting to hear on that one. Fingers crossed. But yeah. And at the debate, all the fucking Trump family are sitting there with no masks on except Melania, which is another thing. They knew they had it at the time. This bullshit of
the timeline. They found out the next morning. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Hope Hicks was positive and then he got tested and found out he was positive. Like, bull fucking shit. He obviously knew he had it. Because you don't go from diagnosis to symptomatic in like 24 hours.
I mean, some of the doctors are saying that it can be that quick, but no, it's not very likely. It's not very likely.
It seems unlikely. If indeed they got it from Hope Hicks at the debate, which was like Tuesday. And then when did he tweet that he had it?
Thursday. So yeah, it's Thursday. Not. Yeah.
And then by Friday, he was going to the hospital.
Yes.
That seems like a really unlikely timeline.
Yes, that's correct.
It seems much more likely, especially because they showed up at the debate too late to get COVID tested.
Yes. And apparently when the Cleveland Clinic, who was there to COVID test people and enforce the rules, said, hey guys, you know, could you wear your masks? The Biden camp, everybody was masked. The Trump camp was like, hush, little people, like waved them off. And now 12 people from the Cleveland Clinic are now positive for COVID.
Oh my God, are you serious? That's so fucked up.
Yes, it is so fucked up. So that's another part of this story is that like Secret Service agents who never say anything are leaking to the press being like, this motherfucker never cared about us.
He went on this like motorcade tour around Walter Reed to wave to his fans. And it's like, there's 3 Secret Service people and a driver in that fucking van with you. You contaminated, infected piece of shit. What are you?
Yeah.
Like, that's horrible.
Yeah.
And it's also why we're going to Walter Reed as a precautionary measure. It's not really necessary. Yeah, sure. That's what they do at hospitals. They bring in COVID-infected people who don't need to be there. Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So they can bring that infection into the hospital and frontline workers can get directly exposed more than they need to. That sounds right. Yeah.
But I think that what we're finally looking at is that, like, he has been, as the bard said, hoist with his own petard. It's very humbling. And one thing that I notice about the moment is that when he goes away, it's quiet and we can think. My friend Sarah tweeted something that her friend shared. It's okay to feel relief and even hope when something makes an abuser stop. Yeah. And I felt that, like, his stochastic terrorism is stopped for a moment because he's stuck in the hospital. And all of a sudden, it feels like,
like you can breathe. Like you can breathe. And his gaslighting and his just constantly stirring shit up and flouting all norms and all decency and all the shit that just makes you go like tight in the chest. All the stuff that you're like, oh God, I can't believe this is reality. It's on pause.
Yep.
And that's such a fucking relief. It's hard to express.
And I think that that actually gets us to this thing about the third act, about the final act. And I think why everybody has been so stressed out is because I feel like one of the things that was very stressful about 2016, and I think we're all very deeply traumatized from 2016. I think it's very hard for us to even read a poll or like look at a candidate and look at the candidate for who they are and how they play without going, but is he electable? Because we're so fucking traumatized from 2016. But I feel like we're in this moment where in 30 days, we're going to know something about our country. Like, are people asking for more of this, or are we going to be done with this fucker? And I think that that's part of why we're all not doing well. And I think that Trump's sickness really reveals that in that moment of quiet where we're like, oh my God, we have been having to deal with the fucking monsters.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting.
You don't even realize what you're going through until it pauses, until it stops for a moment.
That's right.
And I think we should talk about that more in the next segment. Why are we losing our minds right now, specifically, when we've had 4 years of this? And it's not like this is brand new bullshit. It's just been one thing after another for this entire time. Why are we losing our minds? Why am I raising my dose of antidepressants right now?
I mean, there was a great article in the New York Times about the dentist who's like, I'm seeing more cracked teeth from grinding. I had a friend who actually stress flossed a crown out of her tooth. Like,
I did that too. That's amazing.
I can't believe that. I don't know if it was the taxes day or the debate day, where my jaw was in so much pain for the whole day. I had to take like painkiller. Like it was bad. And it reminds me of this sort of thing. There's this thing that you think about, that one thinks about all the time, or at least in the beginning of this Trumpness, where you'd be like, if Obama did that, that would not go over so well.
Yeah, what would people say if Obama had
paid off a stripper for $150,000? Or if Obama had borrowed, was in hock for $450 million to unknown creditors?
Or if Obama had met with the leader of North Korea in a friendly summit face-to-face?
Yes. Yes.
All that shit. Yeah.
All of it.
Yeah.
All of it.
And over time, it became tiresome to the point where you're like, stop saying that. It doesn't matter anymore. Obviously, if Obama had done it, he was being held to different standards. We don't need to point that out anymore.
Yeah. It doesn't work somehow as discourse. It doesn't work rhetorically. It's not helping us. So let's just drop it.
Yeah. Like, we all know it to be true, but the people who are supporting this bullshit aren't paying attention to that or caring about it. So why are we even fucking talking about it?
Similarly, every single thing that Hillary Clinton said would happen with Trump has happened. So that's a similar thing where, again, you can't waste your energy thinking about that. And so I feel like, oh, we've all learned all of these ways to function under the madness, under the constant chaos, in quarantine, as we are like, our economic lives and livelihoods are getting fucked as our kids aren't at school. Like, we're all just like getting through it, donating to Senate candidates and just like keeping our heads down. But there's something about this moment, because there's this possibility for it to end. We're so close. And I think that's making all of this come up.
Yes.
It's almost like we've been in survival mode.
I think there's also an element of the Trump house of cards finally starting to crumble. And that causes us to circle back to those thoughts and ideas, especially remember when Hillary said
that he paid no taxes and had no money, right. Isn't probably in hock to Russia.
Right.
Like,
right,
remember
right.
that?
Remember yeah. that? So things like that come back in a way. And there is an extent to which, like with the Obama thing, I long ago stopped saying that and started getting very annoyed with other people who do say that. But I never stopped in my mind thinking it.
Like, yeah.
Everything yeah. that Trump yes. has done and said, it's like, wow, if Obama had done that.
You can't. It's an imagine. Exercise. The exercise of what the alternatives could have been has been very hard to not consider. Like the exercise yeah. of like, if Hillary, like those 40,000 votes in Pennsylvania.
Oh my God. But it's also an exercise in keeping yourself sane. It's like, I have to keep perspective. I need some kind of measuring stick. I need a frame of reference. And the easiest way to do that is, well, what if it were the other way around? What if Obama had done this? And that sort of keeps you grounded.
Yes. It keeps you remembering, like, this isn't normal. This isn't right. It's never been normal. It's always been fucked. Oh my God, we are so close. We are so close.
But the Hillary stuff particularly feels more urgent recently. And I think a lot of that does have to do with the election coming up.
Yeah.
And the reiteration of that whole experience.
Yeah.
What else can you say?
Yeah.
And it's difficult. That in itself is traumatic because that was a trauma.
Yeah.
That whole election was a trauma.
The whole election, the way the media handled it. There's certain politicians where it's like, anytime Ryan Lizza has anything to say, I'm like, fuck you, go fuck yourself, fuck yourself with a corn cob, like, fuck you, like, you sexually harassing, misogynist motherfucker, who all of your articles about, like, the storm cloud swirling around Hillary, fuck you. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost like, yeah.
Absolutely. So then also, what are the other factors that are leading to this intense sort of psychological challenge of this moment? I feel like one of them is things like, okay, at the debate, Trump refused to condemn white supremacists.
Yes.
In fact,
it sounded like he was giving them
yeah, encouragement, instruction.
Yeah. Yes.
And that yes. that sort of thing, that sort of like escalation, I do feel like that has escalated from there's fine people on both sides, which was bad and was pretty universally condemned, to where he's retweeting white supremacists. He's telling them to stand by. I feel like it goes back to that thing that you've said a couple times about cult leaders and escalation, and how they have to keep escalating and escalating, and there gets to a point where there's nowhere left to go except we all drink poison Kool-Aid.
Yes. And so, well, there are two things. First of all, one of the things that I think has been really hard is that as much as we'd like to think things have gotten worse, I remember during the last presidential election when Trump sounded like he was giving orders to Second Amendment people to kill Hillary Clinton.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So part of it is like, is it escalation or is it just more of the same? Who can remember anymore? Like, that's right. Part of it is like.
But I feel like that plausible deniability
right.
that he might have had then, he just doesn't even try for that anymore. Like, it used to be Second Amendment solutions doesn't
or
mean or
it's a joke. I was joking.
Right,
it was
right.
just, I was just joking. Yeah.
But it gets less and less like that and more direct, I feel like. Or maybe it's just that my patience gets less.
But it's also like, there's this one podcast called The Asset, which is about Trump and Russia. And
sure.
it starts from the beginning of his presidency. And just the shit that happened in the first 2 weeks of the transition, I couldn't listen to it. Because if you actually added up all of the horrifying, horrifying news, the family separations, like everything that's mm-hmm. happened in the past 4 years, I think that we've had to make ourselves fairly numb to just get through it. And I think that we're in this moment where it's coming up in all of its horror. And I think that when you talk about like the craziness or what people are willing to do or the cults, QAnon, which we did a whole episode on, and we did a whole episode on conspiracy theories, QAnon was kind of like a Reddit joke. We now have a Republican running for Congress in Florida. I mean, of course, it's fucking Florida. Who's
but still
actually a QAnon member. The Republican Party of Texas is using QAnon slogans for its official slogan.
That's another thing. The QAnon thing becoming more prominent. Trump got asked about it and refused to condemn QAnon because he is incapable of condemning anybody that is supporting him. So there's that.
The thing about the cult and the escalation and this feeling that like, oh my God, we might have to deal with like, I don't know, is there going to be a civil war when he refuses to give up power? Like, I don't know, like, is the Kool-Aid coming? That's part of the stress and that's part of the sort of like magical belief in voting. If the voting is just enough, if we vote a lot, if it's an overwhelming voting happening. And I think the stress of wanting this to be done, the stress of wanting this to just stop.
Be over, just be over. But then that's, you're right, that is combined with the realization that there's Russian interference, which isn't just memes on Facebook, though those actually do probably make a difference. But it could mean hacking of the actual vote. We don't know. And then if the actual vote, despite whatever attempts at interference, goes against him, I don't think there's anyone, any non-Republican, who doesn't honestly recognize the real possibility that Trump might refuse to recognize the results of the election or might attempt to somehow cancel it.
Yeah.
That's real. Like, let me put some emphasis on that. What we're talking about here, we're talking about a genuine concern. We don't actually know what he would do and if he would even just step down because he refuses to say that he would. And I understand that's part of his shtick and his persona, and he has to do that for his audience. But we don't know what portion of that is real.
And
if it comes to it and he is starting to make some argument that the election is illegitimate, what recourse do we have? Who are we turning to? Is Chuck Schumer gonna fucking save our asses? Like,
no, he's not.
We don't.
I have to say, in my moments where I'm like, oh, we're gonna get the Senate back, I'm like, and Chuck Schumer better not be the fucking majority leader, because that guy has got to go take a fucking nap. Oy. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, but you know what? I will take Chuck Schumer as majority leader right now. I'm fine with that. If that's the option that we have in contrast to Mitch McConnell. But the point is, it's incredibly weird and stressful.
Yeah.
And I just want to add that complicating that stress and adding to it is the sort of weird realization that my parents are perceiving things completely differently. That, I have to admit, has been really contributing to my mental state, where all of this is making me be like, oh my God, democracy is over. Democracy in America has had its time, and now we're on a different chapter. But I know if I said any of this to my parents, they would laugh it off as ridiculous. It's ridiculous to them. We're going to have an election. It's going to be fine. Whoever's going to win is going to win. And just the fact of that, just the fact of them, and not just them, but so many Americans living in this different reality, it's a form of gaslighting. It's like, am I the crazy one? What's happening here that they don't see this? It just adds to the whole stress overall.
It absolutely, absolutely does. That's why I think, in addition to making a plan to vote, which I think, I hope you have all made your fucking plan. If you've been listening to this podcast and you don't have a plan to vote, I don't even know what you've been doing here. Like, come on, people. Right. Okay, yeah. But I also feel like we might need to make a plan for
moving to Canada.
Our sanity just for the next. Okay, moving to Canada, that's one plan. like the actual election day and the day after, I'm not doing anything. Forget that. Like my friends who are professors are like, we're not scheduling classes for those days.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to be functional one way or another.
Right. Right.
Whatever happens one way or another, I'm going to be.
So when we're very, very stressed over the next 30 days, as we're trying to like do the best we can, avoid social media to the best that we can, take our antidepressants, exercise, how are we going to keep ourselves from stress flossing more fillings out of our teeth? What's just, let's just think of one thing each. And we're taking suggestions from our listeners too.
Yes, exactly. So the question is, what am I doing to alleviate my stress in this time?
In the next month, in the coming month, like the next 30 days, the suspense of this last of this final episode of Democracy, of American Democracy, is very intense.
It's intense.
It's deeply so stressful.
What I'm going to do is run a kind of ghoul pool for which Republican do we think is going to come down with COVID next.
All right. Very nice.
I'm kidding. I mean, that's not really it. That doesn't relieve my stress, but it is fun.
I think anything fun is stress relieving.
Fair enough.
Well, I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing, which is writing letters for Vote Forward. I'm going to phone bank, even though I fucking hate it. I want to say what up to Beto, who is running massive phone banking for MJ Hagar, like massive Zoom phone banking where like that's hundreds great. Of people call for MJ Hagar. He's like making up for his like presidential run nonsense. God love him. I think if we all just do a little task and then otherwise try to avoid the news.
And by the way, if phone banking is not your thing, you can also do text banking, which is super easy and it is effective. And you can also make postcards. I made postcards last election. I'm going to do it again now.
And also just call your senator all the time. Let them know that you're watching, man. Even if you're in a blue state, especially if you're in a blue state, say like parliamentary.
Even if you're in a super red state, whatever the situation, call, make your voice heard.
So, hey, guys. We have not started the episodes on them because we've been dealing with the fucking dumpster fire at the end of our American democracy, but we're still collecting problematic faves. We have some really good ones. So keep them coming.
Yes, keep them coming. If you have something you love to revisit that gives you comfort and pleasure in these difficult times, but at the same time, you know, it's kind of problematic, let us know.
Let us know.
Because we want to talk about it.
And we're not going to judge you. Other people are going to judge you. No. We are not going to judge you.
We do not judge. You can reach us via email at saucepodcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us or find us on Instagram as @saucepodcast.
You can join our Patreon, and because of that, you'd be able to join our Discord channel where we've been having really amazing conversations about how to deal with Republican families, fascinating conversations on disability rights with regard to voting, and how there are multiple organizations that are working on letting people with disabilities know that they are allowed to vote. That's another group that is being targeted to not be allowed to vote.
This is something I actually didn't know until a listener brought it to our attention, that they had been under the impression they couldn't vote because of their disability. Mm-hmm. That's pretty wild. But we also have lighthearted conversations there.
About booze. About
booze and movies and TV
video games and yes, all kinds of fun things. All the things.
So you can find our Patreon at patreon.com/saucepodcast.
You can find me at Maya Garance anywhere you are looking for Maya Garances.
You can find me, Rebecca Cohen, as GynoStar on all the various platforms.
We love our listeners. We love that you've still been writing us even in this moment of silence. And we know that you'll understand that, like, we've been having a hard time. You've been having a hard time. We are all having a hard time, but we are here to help each other get through it. Get through the next 30 days, the final episode of the Trump show. Let mote it be, as the witches say. Oh, God. RBG, we love you.
May her memory be a blessing.
May her memory be a fucking revolution. May her memory be a super spreader event that kills a bunch of Republican elected officials.
There you go. Until next time, adios, amigas.